I've been told it looks like maybe we might have all we're going to get in terms of members at this point, but certainly if we can get at least one more member here, we will have quorum and be able to proceed with the meeting. In the absence of quorum, however, it would be good if everybody is interested in kind of talking about the issues before us. The first one is election of a chair, which is something we can't really accomplish, and it probably doesn't pay to have that discussion. And the second one is consideration of an amendment to, or an MOU, I'm not sure which, related to the bargaining contracts of each of the bargaining units, as I understand it, of the state of Minnesota. And if they're here today, I think, at least from the members I've talked to beforehand, there's interest in talking really in detail anyway about the process and understanding better, the process by which we've gotten to where we are with what appears to be a significant proposal, which I think there's really a quandary over how this works and how it aligns with law and process and contracts. So is there anybody here from Minsky? Okay, thanks. Would you guys be willing to talk with us just informally? Okay, thank you.
Maybe we just have them grab a seat at the table instead of... Yeah. I feel like this is,
stand a 50-yard line.
Sort of King Henry VIII here.
Right.
The,
we also have MMB here.
Okay, and MMB's here too, so we can maybe talk with them afterwards, after we talk with the Minsky folks. Great, thank you. So I don't know if we really need to talk about the specifics of the proposal, because we're not going to be able to adopt or not adopt at this point, but... Certainly a lot of us have questions about the process and how we are bringing what appears to be a significant multi-million dollar fiscal impact proposal through the SCR or not through the SCR. It seems like there's kind of one foot in the MOU process and one seems to be trying to touch down in the SCR statute and process. So with that, could maybe if... and by the way, do they call it Minnesota State now?
Correct. Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Dale and Mr.
Mark Carlson.
Mr. Carlson, thank you for coming. How long ago did it become Minnesota State, and I didn't know it?
Mr. Chair, members, it was the board approved the name, I want to say, in June.
Okay. Excellent. Then I can use the excuse I've been campaigning and I haven't had time.
That's right. That's fair enough.
Thank you. So, Mr. Dale and Mr. Carlson, could you kind of maybe outline not as much specifics about the proposal, because I don't know that there's a lot of interest in going into the weeds right now on it, but kind of the process by which we came here today with a significant expenditure, a proposal for a significant expenditure, and kind of the track that it followed through those contracts that are represented through Minnesota State.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Mark Carlson. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Human Resources for Minnesota State. What we did last round of bargaining, you may recall, with one of our faculty units, the inter-faculty organization, the IFO, we negotiated a paid parental leave. We went through quite a long process to get to that point, but we received what we felt was substantial language changes, and we felt it was the right thing to do. So we negotiated that, and it was approved by you and subsequently by the legislature for the last round of bargaining. At that point... and I will defer to MMB later when they discuss this. I was notified by MMB that other unions were interested in going down this route, and they were going to put a work group together. MMB was putting a work group together to study this. I was a member of that work group. We met over several months to discuss how this might be framed. I have to defer to MMB in terms of how it came to be an MOU. We basically worked on this as a employee retention and recruitment issue. We in Minnesota State have a very significant problem right now with recruiting retaining qualified employees. There's just a great deal of competition in the marketplace in higher ed at the present time. We want to stay competitive. And so we knew that this is an important piece for that. So we wanted to be involved in the process. In terms of the route it took through MMB, I'm afraid this is kind of where my involvement ends. I met with the group. We came up with a framework that seemed appropriate, that could be applied to all of the unions. And then MMB took it from there.
So, Mr. Carlson, what about the process through your contract groups? Was there a negotiation process through your contract groups?
Mr. Chair, there was no negotiation per se in terms of the term negotiations as we would normally refer to it. What we did is we took the work group analysis and provided it to the unions, the two faculty units that had not already had this benefit. And they took it to their members, went through their normal ratification process, and signed the MOU that is before you today.
So, Mr. Carlson, the unions, how many groups are there that we're talking about here?
Mr. Chair, two.
Two of them, yeah. They took what came out of the work group and basically stamped their approval in a ratification with their membership. Is that right?
That's correct.
When did that happen?
Mr. Chair, that happened about a month ago.
There's other questions.
MMB did their negotiations much earlier. I needed to take, because of the our board procedure, anything that could approach or exceed $1 million, I have to take to the board. So I was not as fast to the table as was MMB. They didn't have that extra step. So I couldn't get on the board docket until last month. October, I took this to the board. The board approved it. Again, I was several weeks behind MMB. MMB did theirs in July. We had ours approved in October.
So, Mr. Carlson, that approval was with Minnesota State on the administrative side. What about the union side? When did those two particular groups approve?
In the Mr. Chair, in the 2 weeks prior.
It would have been about October 1?
Correct.
So, and then you guys were about October 10th or 15th or something like that?
Approximately so, yes, sir.
Okay. Senator Benson's got a question. Senator Dames.
I did have a question. You said one of your units was given leave as part of negotiations in standard contract procedures. And so have you seen improved retention?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, it is so new. It only took effect this last year, this last summer. So, in fact, very few people have actually taken this benefit from the interfaculty organization.
Mr. Chair, we've heard things characterized as negotiations. Aren't negotiations normally required to be disclosed?
Mr. Carlson.
Publicly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, disclosed? I'm not...
Public notice? Am I misunderstanding?
Negotiations are public meetings, and so...
So when was notice given of public meetings?
Mr. Dale?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, Chris Dale, Senior System Director for Labor Relations for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The negotiation sessions are open to the public. They're not per se public meetings. PELRA establishes that meetings between the negotiators for the collective bargaining units and the Minnesota State or other agencies are open to the public, but they're different than public meetings.
Senator Benson?
I'm just trying to find the statutory reference.
Senator Dames?
So the what's the additional cost going to be to Minnesota State or formerly Minsky? What's that additional cost going to be?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, we estimate that on the high end of $2 million per year.
And could you tell me where that money is going to come from?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, that money will come from the same way we always, it'll end up being taken out of Hyde, if you will. We will have to take it from other resources. So what we do is look internally. Every campus has to balance their budget at the end of the year and find the money.
Senator Dames?
Just a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this would be for Mr. Dale. You were talking about negotiations. Now, as I understand, this was not negotiated. This was ratified. Is that correct? I mean, did you truly negotiate?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, Mr. Carlson said in Vice Chancellor Carlson said that with respect to these MOUs, not negotiated in the traditional sense of the term negotiated, it's probably worth remembering that with the paid parental leave benefit, this in the IFO agreement, it was negotiated as part of regular course of bargaining. That's not before you today.
So, Mr. Dale, it was with a separate contract last contract round, correct? So
it was actually in the 14-15 round of negotiations, but it was very late in the process. You may remember that the IFO agreement came in quite late in that process, and so it was not entered into. You did not, the SER did not give interim approval to that agreement until very late in fiscal year 15, and we have the experience with it really only for half a year for the IFO agreement, that is, for only that half a year, and then this year, fiscal year.
Senator Benson.
I was misreading part of the statute. So my apologies.
So to be clear, there was this work group meeting, and was that a public meeting?
Mr. Chair, there were no public members in attendance. I'm not sure if it would have been characterized as a public meeting or not. It was certainly posted. We knew when the meeting dates were, but there were no public members present. We had a membership would include several of the bargaining units, M&B staff, and myself.
So, Mr. Carlson, where was it posted? How, if I was Joe or Jane Q. Public, where would I hear about it?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to defer to M&B on that one. I don't know the answer.
So, I mean, so Minsky didn't, you yourself didn't help post or share the realities around the occurrence of the meeting with the public on your own?
Mr. Chair, we did not. At the time that we were doing the work group, it was really about exploring options and trying to figure out, is this something that's viable? What would it cost? How would we administer this in a way that'd be fair to all employees so we didn't have disparity from unit to unit? So it was really at the point that when we broke up and we concluded our work on what a paid parental leave benefit might look like, we had not talked about a path in terms of how it might end up in contract or being implemented.
Okay. So the work group met how many times, Mr. Carlson, approximately?
I'd say 8 or 10 times, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So, Mr. Carlson, after you came up with a product as a work group, then at some point you got to this October 1st or 15th when then there was approval by your board and then also independently ratification by the two union groups. And to be clear, there were no other activities between those two points in time. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, what we learned from M&B was that they were going to go the MOU route. And so they were meeting separately with the units that they bargain with. So that happened, and then we, in discussing this with M&B, recognized that in terms of employee fairness, we certainly couldn't have a good group, because keep in mind that MMB negotiates about 40% of our employees. Those contracts are negotiated by MMB. We have the faculty units that we negotiate, Minnesota State negotiates separately. So it seemed to be a huge disparity to me to have 40% or greater of our population receiving this benefit, but basically be two faculty units that would be outlawed. So once they were going to do this through the MOU route, we said we need to do it as well. We need to have our employees treated the same way as all state employees are treated. We can't have two groups as outliers. So that then we contacted the two bargaining units and let them know we were proceeding, but that I had to go to the board for this. So I delivered this to the board at the October board meeting. It was approved at that point, and we find ourselves here today.
So there wasn't, Mr. Carlson, thank you. So there wasn't, again, there wasn't any negotiation that happened between the end of the work group and the decision to go back and get ratification and approval from the two independent.
Mr. Chair, there was no negotiation in the traditional sense.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Gruen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your willingness to discuss this. Just help me understand. So what is there a Me Too clause in the contracts that would justify you expanding this benefit to the groups that you represent?
Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not sure I understand that.
A Me Too is it means that if one group gets a certain benefit, it automatically applies to the other.
Mr. Carlson?
Go ahead, Mr. Dale.
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, there is no favored nations or Me Too clause in our collective bargaining agreements.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other question, what precedent or statute would you reference to justify a memorandum of understanding that actually spends additional tax dollars? Help me understand that. My understanding of memorandums of understanding is that they're used for administrative purposes, but not to increase benefits, or am I misunderstanding that?
Mr. Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, there is no additional taxpayers' expense here. This we would, as testified earlier, we would find this money through reallocation resources. Again, the idea here, what the genesis of this whole project was to stay competitive in the marketplace for our employees, as we are finding that it is becoming increasingly difficult to recruit and retain in terms of, we can only speak here for Minnesota State, MMB can speak to the others, but we're finding it more and more difficult to compete because other states and municipalities and what have you are going this route.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more clarification. So what precedent or statute do you believe or understand gives you authority to issue a memorandum of understanding that whether taxpayer dollars or not, and we can argue that later, expand benefits?
Mr. Dale, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, we have entered into memorandums of agreement or understanding, however they're denominated, I would say with some frequency for a long period of time. We believe, if asked, I haven't been asked that question, at least not more than once or twice. And I guess I would say we believe that it's part of our general, appropriation of authority, our allocation of authority to us to bargain and to implement and interpret the agreement, and ultimately to manage grievances. A lot of MOAs or MOUs are used to deal with grievances that are filed, both, and sometimes those involve interpretations, and sometimes they just involve a particular disgruntled employee who is unhappy with what has happened to them and trying to find a solution.
Representative Gruenhagen. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, can you quote a or reference a precedent where an MOU was used to increase benefits, like in the case that's in front of us here, to the tune of $2 million? Are there other MOUs in the past that lay a foundation for these types of benefit expansions?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, not to my knowledge. This is an unusual set of circumstances, to be sure. But there might be one. I'm not aware of one.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is the limit to 6 weeks, is that based on budget availability? Or is it just an arbitrarily chosen number? Why didn't you choose 12 weeks? Why not 20? Why not 4? As part of the negotiations, sorry, air quotes. How much did you say, okay, this is how much extra money we have to work with, and so this is what the benefit will be? And if there was more money available, would you have gone to 12 weeks or maybe every Friday off? I'm just trying to figure out how you placed boundaries on this.
Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, what we did in the work group was looked at best practices. You know, what's going on out there, and what can we do to be competitive in the marketplace? 6 weeks is what people are doing. There are exceptions to that. There are 12-week paid parental leaves out there, but 6 weeks seems to be the standard. What we heard from the unions loud and clear that oftentimes, particularly young employees don't have the sick leave balance, don't have the vacation balance, and going out unpaid during the period where right after childbirth is a very stressful time, and we actually lose employees as a result of that. It's a very difficult time for employees. So this is, if you will, an employer-friendly sort of benefit that we would use as part of the toolkit to recruit and retain employees, the best possible employees.
Mr. Dale?
Actually, if I could follow up, do you offer short-term disability to your employees?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, yes.
And so how does short-term disability not cover maternity?
Mr. Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, short-term disability doesn't cover the non-birthing parent. And if I might, you had asked the question about the negotiation process and comparing costs. And that is what happened with the IFO when we negotiated that agreement with their benefit. We did look at the relative costs. We did cost it out. We didn't use the same assumptions that MMB has used with respect to this time. We were floundering a bit, but we generated a cost estimate, and the actual experience kind of falls in between what we estimated and what MMB has estimated.
Mayor Benson?
I'm again curious exactly how much money is there available for extra employee benefits. You said you're going to just cut other places. How much is available?
Mr. Carlson.
What's the total number?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, if I understand the question, it's not like everybody has, extra funds available. This would be a hardship, no question. It's just that the employer believes that in doing this, it's a lot more expensive to recruit and retain people than it's cheaper to retain than it is to recruit and train. So we don't have like just extra money. Like we've been taking we've been doing reallocations for years, and it's very difficult. I won't color code that. It's very difficult. but our leadership council, our board felt that in order for us to stay competitive, that this is something that that they wanted to make available to its employees.
Mr. Chair, most employers that I know do exit interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you finding, are you gathering data via exit interviews? Can you show us some statistics on people who are leaving because of family-friendly opportunities in other places?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, we do exit interviews. It oftentimes, if you're aware of that process, you certainly know that people aren't always as open on those as they could be. They often just cite better opportunities or for family reasons, that sort of thing. What we have noticed is with the millennials, their willingness to leave, to move, is significantly greater than previous generations. And what we need to do is posture ourselves in a way to be prepared for that. So exit interviews are not mandatory, but we do ask for that information, and we do compile that. It would be difficult to – it's never as easy as I left because I didn't like my boss, or I left – for a dollar more an hour, or I left for because they didn't offer that. But we do know from the human resources studies that we've done, not just in Minnesota State, but in the state and nationally, that paid parental leave does play into retention.
So, Mr. Carlson, you're saying you're allocating money from somewhere else for this. So does that have an upward pressure or downward pressure on tuition?
Mr. Chair, tuition, as you know, we our income, if you will, our revenue comes from two sources, the state and from tuition. We've been very it's been difficult, but we've been able to hold tuition at current levels. And as you know, we are substantially cheaper than any other provider in the state, substantially less. And we pride ourselves in that. It will come from it is true that that's our revenue, and this will be an expense. So between the two sources of taxpayer money and tuition, this is exactly how we'll pay for it.
So it's an upward pressure. Any other questions, members? Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I'm not opposed to negotiating a benefit like this. Okay, I can understand why it would be negotiated. But, you know, having been a chief negotiator at my local school board for 6 years, you set precedents, and to use an MOU to enhance benefits financially without going through the normal processes, to me, seems irregular at best, and probably something else at worst, okay? So, I don't have a problem with negotiating a particular benefit, but I just wonder, you know, I'm questioning the process that's being used here to expand those benefits. And, you know, you say, well, it's not really taxpayer money, but taxpayer money does flow to your institution. And ultimately, you know, being on the higher ed committee, we get requests that we're short funding and we need this additional funding. So it shows up someplace. And I guess that's my concern.
So one quick question, and then I think we maybe want to move on to MMB. So Mr. Carlson, Mr. Dale, we've talked a lot about kind of the MOU side, and it just seems, again, like this new benefit, which seems to be not an MOU or a negotiated contract, but Section 3.855 of statute provides us, which guides this group, the processes through which we work and are directed by the people of Minnesota to operate. There are four different areas or four different situations in which we should meet and get together to make interim approvals or disapprovals, and those are a negotiated collective bargaining agreement and arbitration awards, compensation plans, or salaries. So would you characterize this as any of those four?
Mr. Chair, I would think it'd be just part of the collective bargaining agreement. Yes.
So you're suggesting this isn't an MOU, this is instead a collective bargaining agreement, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, no, I'm not suggesting, what I'm suggesting as a MOU to a collective bargaining unit, that it falls under that reference of the statute, that it falls that under your purview for the collective bargaining unit. This is an MOU that attaches itself to a bargaining unit, to a collective bargaining agreement. Therefore, I would think, and that the MB lawyers would be better apt to discuss this one, but I would agree that it's under your purview.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
In November 2016, there was an MOU that creates an exception to the contract provision that limits stipends honoraria to $1,000 a year. Did that come before this group?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not familiar with that particular MOU.
What about August 23rd adds contract language that allows release time? Did that come
to
this group?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, we regularly submit MOU, that might have been an MOA, but MOUs or MOAs, written side agreements, to the committee, not necessarily to go through the interim approval process, but for so the committee has knowledge of those things. So, and we have, I think, done so with the assumption that if the committee had an interest, we would be called upon to answer questions about it.
Mr. Dale, what are you required to do by law in that regard?
I don't know that the law speaks clearly to the notion of clarifying interpretations of the agreement, settling grievances, except that we have authority to adjust grievances. I don't think it speaks clearly to whether this committee will approve those or not.
So Mr. Dale, does the law require you in regard to MOUs to bring those before this committee or not?
Mr. Chair, to the extent that an MOU does not represent an amendment, substantially the equivalent of an amended collective bargaining agreement, I don't believe that the law requires us to bring an MOU before the committee. We have been requested to submit those documents, and we do so.
Mr. Dale, Mr. Hubinger cleared it up. Apparently the negotiated instruments within them direct you to share those with the SER, but not for an approval or a disapproval. So have you been doing that regularly with these? We've got a list of 24 or so MOUs in the last 2 years. And I don't know that I've seen any of these particularly. But, Mr. Dale, how do you share those with us according to the contract agreement that's ratified by the legislature each biennium?
Mr. Chair, I can't speak with – I don't recall the particular provision in the contract that you're referencing, but I can tell you that we do submit these, and we submit them via staff. And our understanding is that you – the subcommittee and the subcommittee staff have suggested that you want the written side agreements that represent something unusual, an interpretation of the language, or something else that's unusual, not just the routine resolution of a grievance challenging discipline, for example, that you're not that the staff was not interested in having us submit those, because we get lots of grievances challenging discipline. but rather something different than that. And so we have regularly submitted those, and we do submit them to the staff.
So Mr. Dale, does the ratified contract differentiate between which types of MOUs you should share with the subcommittee or not?
Mr. Chair, as I mentioned, I don't recall the particular provision that you're referencing, and if it doesn't, and we have been making, if we haven't been submitting all that we should, we would be happy to submit more.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. Have we been shared these MOUs in the past or not? I may have missed them, but Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, for background purposes, the resolutions that the subcommittee considers when approving contracts requires that the state, either MNSCU or MMB, submit any MOUs to the subcommittee. Those MOUs are typically administrative and interpretation issues in nature and are really minor. They deal with an employee who has too much vacation leave and isn't able to get their balance down by the end of the year, that sort of thing, or a seniority question. So it's a contract interpretation issue. But both MMB and MNSCU submit those to the subcommittee. If there are major items in there, we would do a summary memo and send it to you. It's been several years since there has been, in my mind, as from staff's perspective, a substantive enough issue to bring to the subcommittee.
Thank you. Other questions, Senator Benson?
I was just wondering who decides what's material. You know, if MNSCU decided this wasn't material, it would have just been passed through the process. I guess it's odd that something's material enough for us to look at, but not material enough for it to go through a standard negotiation process. I guess I'm quite confused that this is a minor change, sort of buffing off the edges and making adjustments, and yet it is material enough that the entities want approval without having to go through a regular and transparent process. And so I guess I'm sort of at a loss as to why you want it both ways. If it's a memorandum of understanding, then let's just move it through the memorandum process. If it's material amendment, and let's do that process. It's not really a question, more of a statement.
Senator Benson, I don't know that the statute is clear and offers a process by which this subcommittee will make amendments to an agreement. It says any negotiated collective bargaining agreements. That means a contract, A, that has been, B, negotiated. And I don't think this is either one of those. So it's really confusing. Other questions, members? I think MMB is waiting for to have their turn. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Dale.
Thank you, sir.
Please introduce yourself. I'm sorry, I forgot.
Good morning. Eric Hallstrom, Deputy Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget, for the record.
Welcome, Mr. Hallstrom. Thank you.
Do you
have kind of some opening comments? Again, we're really focusing on the process and the authority for the state government, for the Dayton administration, to do this.
Sure. I have a few opening comments that should walk you through the process and hopefully answer some of the questions that you have. You know, the state of Minnesota currently provides unpaid parenting leave to state employees, unpaid leave, for both employees in the bargaining units and in their compensation plans. It's about 6 months of unpaid leave with an option to extend that unpaid leave to 1 year with employer approval. And birth mothers are eligible to use accrued sick leave following their birth, but non-birth parents, including employees who are adopting, are limited to using 5 days of accrued sick leave hours when a child joins their family. So during the last session of bargaining, during the spring and summer of 2015, paid parenting leave was an item that was put on the table. And in response to those conversations, the governor agreed to engage in a process to assess the opportunities for a paid parenting leave benefit for state employees. Mr. Carlson made reference to this labor management working group. That joint working group was formed to review the current policy environment, look at the needs of employees and for the employers at the state agency HR offices to evaluate costs and the benefits of a paid leave proposal. That group was made up of representatives from of unions, MAPE, the Middle Management Association, AFSCME, had representatives along with Minnesota State, Minnesota Management and Budget staff, state human resource directors from a couple of our agencies participated as well. And that working group concluded that paid parenting leave would result in important benefits to the state, including benefits to our recruitment and our retention, again, as alluded to by Mr. Carlson. I think that a copy of the working group's report was actually included in Mr. Huebinger's memo and speaks to the product that came out of that process. It wasn't a particular policy so much as a recommendation and I think cost assessment for 3 weeks of leave, 6 weeks of leave, and 8 weeks of leave. But I'm without flipping. It was something on the longer end as well. After receiving the report from the working group in February, I think is when we submitted that to the governor and lieutenant governor's office, the governor announced his support for 6 weeks of state employee paid parental leave. As Mr. Carlson explained, NMB engaged in a bargaining process in July with the exclusive representatives for the units that we bargain with. And negotiated an MOU. And I would consider the approach that we took to fall into the negotiation or bargaining category. We had to come up with language that was amenable to both sides. Obviously, the governor had indicated his support for 6 weeks. I don't know that I wasn't at the table. I don't believe that the amount of time was a subject that was given much attention in those sessions, but certainly could have been. The parties negotiated MOUs that provided for the 6 weeks of leave. The eligibility for employees is determined using the same criteria we use for family and medical leave, which is an unpaid leaves criteria, and that generally means the employee has been employed with the state for a year and has worked more than 1,250 hours in the past year. A couple other aspects to the proposal. It's available to both the birth and non-birth parents, as well as to parents who are adopting a child. And that's an important aspect of the policy because our understanding is that all types of parents are looking for a similar benefit and opportunity to bond with their children when a new child joins their family. I can answer specific questions about kind of the operation of the policy. I'm gathering that interest is more on the process and implementation, so
thank you,
more than happy to speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. Hallstrom. So, Mr. Hallstrom, were all the bargaining units included as part of the working group? We have, 12 or 13 or 10 or 11 somewhere in there, and then we've got three or four compensation plans.
That's right. So I had to work on this to make sure I get it right. So AFSCME obviously has three labor contracts, but the first one of those covers five of the bargaining units. That's the master contract. AFSCME had a member on the working group. I don't know which of the units that she was a member of.
But of those there, they're all negotiated differently, separately. If they're negotiating a contract, those groups are negotiating them separately normally. All right?
We do typically engage in what's called pattern bargaining so that the benefits tend to be fairly similar across the units, but you're correct. There are differences among the contracts and among the units. And as a short answer, no, there was not a representative from every unit at the part of the working group, but the invitation was extended to folks that might be interested from any of the units. So, again, we had MMA, MAPE, and AFSCME had sent individuals to participate in the working group. As far as the bargaining session itself for the development of the policy that's before you today, the MOU that's before you today, that would have had all of the units represented.
So was an invitation extended, Mr. Hallstrom, to the public for this meeting? For these meetings, six or eight or whatever the number was?
I don't recall whether there was a formal invitation put out. There may have been a press release that discussed the group, but I can't.
Do you recall a formal or informal invitation of any sort?
I do not recall a formal, and I would hesitate to say there wasn't an informal offering. I know that we had participants or interested individuals attend the meetings from some of the bargaining units who weren't considered, I guess, part of the formalized working group. Those tended to ebb and flow depending on the meeting date and time. And so, you know, sometimes there was a few people there, but it tended to be, as Mr. Carlson mentioned, somewhat technical, and you know, it was a opportunity to discuss how a leave benefit might interact with the current structure of agency leaves and that kind of thing.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How would somebody not on that email list have known that these meetings were open to the public?
Well, I suspect that there was publication by some of the bargaining units, but outside of other state employees, I'm not entirely sure if there was.
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, do you as a state employee feel any responsibility to have this information available to the public?
Mr. Hallstrom.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the work product and the information that was shared as part of those meetings, we consider public information and public documents. We'd be happy to share and do feel an obligation to make those available to the public, yes.
Mr. Hallstrom, can you make available to us any copies of any documents that invited people? Is that what you just said you were going to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I will. We can do that, yes.
Otherwise, it appears that this was not a public meeting. Senator Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're talking about 6 weeks of leave and competitiveness, and I had raised the disability pay. As I'm looking at the memo that we were provided January 4th as part of the governor's proposal, the governor felt it was material enough that he actually went to the legislature with a proposal. That's how material this was to the governor. So probably not a small thing. But it talks about 3 weeks, 4 weeks for birth mothers, 2 weeks for other parents. So I would appreciate sort of the competitive analysis. Where do you draw your employees from? Which areas are you having trouble recruiting? Whose needs are not being met? Is there a particular category? I know Regional Treatment Centers in St. Peter, we're having a lot of trouble recruiting. Was this specifically raised as a recruiting issue? Because I thought there was sort of work environment and treatment, and so we had another piece that we really had to work on for safe workspace there. And so I would love to see an analysis of where you're having trouble recruiting and what solutions are proposed to fix it. Because if we're competing against major cities, the University of Minnesota, you mentioned General Mills and Ecolab. I guess I'd like to see a comparative analysis of where you're having trouble recruiting people.
Mr. Hallstrom.
Senator Benson, Mr. Chair. We can provide the materials. I don't have anything with me today that speaks to kind of a breakdown by industry type, but I know that we have that. Obviously, every agency has different pressures. You mentioned some of the pressures that face specifically DHS, and I know we've done quite a bit of work on the retention side to find ways to bring in health service technicians and nursing staff for some of our facilities.
And there was an MOU?
Yes.
That specifically dealt with incentives for hiring. And so I would really like to see the drill down of where we're not getting employees that we need.
Mr. Ellsworth.
Absolutely. We can provide that to you. And I also think it bears repeating that to some extent we are trying to be proactive in an increasingly competitive environment. We are hearing from our agencies that it is challenging to hire. In some cases, it's because of compensation levels. In other cases, it's because of anything from commutes to a desire to work a more flexible schedule. And this is something that we think that we can offer to our employees sometimes in lieu of a pay increase that can make them state an attractive employer. And with as low as 4% unemployment in the state, we don't anticipate it's going to get any easier to recruit the best, and that's what we'd like to be able to do. I would also just mention that we, you know, there's a number of private employers, as you alluded to, you know, from U.S. Bank, the Mayo Clinic, Target, Ecolab, General Mills, Best Buy, Land O'Lakes, that have some combination of benefit policies targeted to birth and non-birth parents, and as well as the public sector that we also find ourselves in competition with as well, the counties, the big metro counties, and some of the cities in and around the metro area.
So, Mr. Hallstrom, you had the working group meetings, and they finished their work in February, I think you said. Why wasn't there an effort or discussion about this with the last contracts rather than bringing forward something that is as obtuse and awkward and, as far as I can see, not authorized in law as this is?
As I mentioned, the issue originated in the last round of bargaining, and so we felt that this process, the work group itself and follow-on MOU, was a follow-through on our end with the commitments that were made during the last round of bargaining. We weren't in a place to be able to really assess the need or the scope or the implementation policy for a benefit like this when we were at the table last time, but we committed to work through that process in a joint and collaborative manner with our colleagues, and that's the approach we took. You know, as you note, the memorandum of understanding can take a variety of forms, and occasionally, as in the case with DHS and the health service technicians, you know, it may address a recruitment incentive. In this case, because it affects all employees, and because the governor had also wanted the amendments to the pay plans as well as the contracts, we requested that this have a full hearing of the SCR, even if that's not necessary under an understanding of the contract language.
So, Mr. Hallstrom, why, you know, I mean, this is, I'm still not clear whether you really think this is a, this is another negotiated agreement. I mean, are you saying that you actually negotiated these contracts, or are you saying it's an MOU?
It is styled a memorandum of understanding. It is, in effect, a amendment to the collective bargaining agreements. It was bargained by state staff with representatives of the
union. So, Mr. Hallstrom, where in law can you cite that you have the ability to bring forward an amendment and bring it before this group for approval or disapproval?
Our understanding was that under 3.855, this falls into the category of a collective bargaining agreement and would be subject to the same approval process that that is subject to.
Okay, Mr. Hallstrom, I'm going to read to you the four elements that 3.855 contemplates exclusively. Any negotiated collective bargaining agreements, arbitration awards, compensation plans, or salaries. Which of those are you saying this is?
This would be a negotiated collective bargaining agreement because it amends and adds a provision to the collective bargaining agreements. So, in effect, it is a change to those.
But we've already got a collective bargaining agreement, correct?
That's correct.
So, Mr. Hallstrom, where was the negotiation? Where are you going to say that happened? Or where do you say that happened? Where was the public negotiation process that is understood to be part of these contract agreements?
Physically, I don't know.
It's in law.
I don't know the address, but I mean, there was a negotiation session between representatives of the state and the bargaining units that would have been open to the public.
Are you talking about the work group, Mr. Hallstrom?
No, a specific bargaining session that took place following on the work group's work. Again, the work group's product was simply a recommendation that the state move forward with a benefit. It didn't actually specify the number of weeks. It specified some options and found that there was a business case for that benefit. The labor relations group at MMB actually negotiated an MOU that set out the justifications for it, specified the benefit, and then actually amended the collective bargaining agreements. I'm not sure if those are in the packet before you.
Senator Dames.
Well, the more we talk, the murkier this thing seems to be getting. I have some real concerns in the way this process is being handled. Because what happens is you have one union that had this as part of their contract. They negotiated it. And they did it the right way. So now we don't know. I mean, negotiations are about give and take. They're about compromise. They're about cooperation. So you have one union that did this. You and I don't know what they may have chose not to have in their agreement, what may have been negotiated out because they felt very strongly about that position. So now what's happening is we're coming back, or you're coming to us and asking us to approve this based on an MOU that was negotiated, but the contract was not opened back up. So if the contract is not opened back up, is it truly negotiated? I don't believe so. I don't think that that's... I'm really concerned. What's going to be the next MOU? Is it going to be because we feel that if we can give people Fridays off, that that's going to make it easier to hire people and easier to keep people? And that may be a reach. Certainly it might be, but we don't... My concern is I think we have now changed the MOU process, or if we approve this, we would be changing the MOU process to be handling simple things that, when we look at that list, certainly some of those are very viable and was handled the right way. But I think we're really overreach now. And so what's the next step? If this gets approved and goes through, what's the next step? So some union works very hard. They do an honest job of negotiating, and they give up something to get this because that's what their membership wants and that's what they feel is best for them. Then are we going to come with an MOU and say, well, we really need to do this because this union now has it? I'm very concerned about that. And quite frankly, I voted for to approve the one that had it in their contract. So nobody can say that I'm against the process or against this issue. I just don't believe we're bringing it to the table the right way. And I believe it has to be part of a negotiated contract and not part of an MOU. And I really believe that if this is going to go forward legislatively, we're probably going to have to take a very strong look at getting rid of MOUs, period. And I don't think that that's in the best interest of anybody at this table to do that. But if it's going to come to this, to where we're going to allow these kind of reaches, I'm afraid we're going to have to make some other decisions. So that's just my two cents worth.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for your testimony, Mr. Hallstrom. And just to follow up to Senator Dam's comment, you know,
again, we set precedent in government. And so when this goes forward, again, we're not complaining, and I just reiterate, negotiating the benefit. But you set a precedent, and, you know, at what point does it become a distortion of the process? And expand, you know, the cost was $2 million. Well, we have a fiscal note that says significantly more than that. You know, at what point does an MOU get used to simply expand a multiple amount of benefits? So I would simply reiterate and support Senator Dam's comments that this is what the key concern is the process versus the benefit itself as far as being negotiated.
Thank you, Representative Grunheim. Mr. Hallstrom, is there anything precluding MMB, the administration, and the unions from negotiating this particular item as part of the basket of negotiated goods or negotiated items, if you will, as part of the next round of negotiated agreements to back out of the rather legally precarious position that you seem to be in right now?
Well, there's certainly nothing that would prevent the unions or the state to raise this as part of the bargaining process as we move into the next set of contract negotiations in the spring and summer. Our understanding of the statute is that it would this particular item would, in the absence of a disapproval by the subcommittee, be considered an interim, having interim approval, and then would have to be taken up by the legislature in the January session.
So is there anything precluding you from not going forward with something that you've heard from at least five members, at least 50% of the subcommittee on employee relations, that we don't think this is the right way to do it, we don't think there's precedent for it, we don't think there's legal authority in the law, we think that it's not a proper item to be doing in an MOU, that it's beyond the scope that was authorized in the by the legislature in each of the respective MOUs. Mr. Hallstrom, I'm looking at the preamble for the Middle Management Association. I'll read it to you. It says, if the parties mutually agree during the term of this agreement may be supplemented by such additional provisions relating to departmental issues as the parties of this agreement deem appropriate. As you can see, that's very confining and somewhat precise language. It's for dotting the I's and crossing the T's, like this history of MOUs, some of which themselves might actually already be starting to jump outside of that. But largely, that's what they do. And this is whole new policy, cut from whole cloth, that isn't an MOU, and it doesn't have authority in law. So is that something that the administration would consider at this point, is bringing it as part of the undeniably legal, undeniable proper, undeniably having precedent that a negotiating process in the next process will provide?
So just to reiterate, obviously, there's nothing that prevents us from moving forward with this as part of the next round of bargaining. I haven't given as much thought to the question that you're proposing as to whether we could withdraw this, and I would hesitate to give an answer to that without talking to our staff and our lawyers. We do have a signed agreement between representatives of the state and the bargaining units that discusses its I think specifically says that upon approval of the SER, it would go into effect. And so I would be concerned about whether doing something contravening that provision would be problematic for the state.
So, Mr. Hallstrom, what happens next? Obviously, you didn't get approval from the SER for this within the 3.855 statute. Of course, at least I and I think other members don't believe you have the authority to bring it through, and don't believe that we have the authority to act on it to begin with, because it's not outlined in law. So what is the administration going to do next in regard to this issue?
Our understanding of the statute is that after 30 days, in the absence of a disapproval by the SER, that a provision brought under 3855 as a negotiated collective bargaining agreement would be considered to have interim approval, and it would be under the statute then we are required to implement something that has upon approval, and then obviously it will go to the legislature for a final consideration and determination by the legislative bodies.
So, Mr. Hallstrom, you are suggesting then that the administration's understanding is that with the foot that it has in the 3.855 SER approval process side, not the MOU foot, but the SER foot, you believe that you've got 30 days after submission to this group to get an up or down, either affirmative approval, affirmative disapproval, or a non-approval, which says that 30 days means in essence that you have approval, an item, of course, that I've written a bill about that was unsuccessful, but we've had a lot of discussions about. So you're suggesting that that applies to this situation, and the administration is simply going to go forward and implement this tomorrow or the next day. Is that right?
So the 30 days will have run by tomorrow. We would begin the process of implementation, assuming it's there's an absence of a disapproval by the subcommittee.
So, Mr. Hallstrom, the signed MOU that you have with the unions, does that make mention of the 30-day automatic implementation?
It specifically says that they will become effective after approval by the Legislative Coordinating Commission Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Our understanding is that approval is obtained under the terms of 3.855.
Well, I'm interested in what the agreement says, not what your understanding is. What does the agreement
say? It simply says approval. It uses the word approval. And it does not make specific reference to the legislative process.
And did you receive approval from the SER today?
No. Well, hope springs eternal.
We don't have quorum, Mr. Hallstrom.
I imagine not.
So you didn't receive approval. And the contract itself, the MOU, says it will go forward, the agreement you had with the unions, if you get approval of this group. And you just declared that you don't have approval. So you see where the legal problems we are seeing with this lie? In both feet, you're kind of straddling a creek, and there's swamp on both sides, and somebody's draining that swamp somewhere right now. But that's where you're at. And it would be my hope that the wise thing would happen here, and that the administration would talk with the groups and find a way to include this the proper way, the legal way, instead of this way, which does not have any footing in law. Any other questions, members, or comments? Mr. Hallstrom, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Members, anything else in this informal meeting that has no formal action today? Representative Gruenhagen?
Would it be a worthwhile to draft a letter and have our subcommittee sign it, requesting that it be withdrawn for the following reasons?
Well, it couldn't come from the subcommittee because we don't have a meeting authorizing that, but certainly you as a member or a collection of members could do that on your own. Anything else, members? Thank you so much, everyone, for coming today. Thanks, Greg.
Good discussion.
It's with you.
Okay.
I only charge.